Mr. Springer.
And under debate, Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to the canvas board, yes.
Okay. We seem to be talking over one another. I will pause and give you first debate. Council Member Springer, did you hear me?
He says this audio is horrible. I don't know.
We're having
It's all right. It's okay. There's some kind of horrible hum here, so I'll just wait to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Springer. I'll move it back to Mr. Diamond.
Sure. Yes, typically council would accept the canvas board certification of the results, and we have no reason to question that. And it was a good election, and I want to also thank the city clerk's office for doing the absolute best they could under the circumstances. It was a good election for everyone who appeared. Lots of space, lots of masks, lots of hand sanitizer, so it went well. So, and I want to congratulate the new council member.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond. And Ms. Hansen, as the maker of the second motion, or the second to the motion, you have a second debate if you so choose.
Nope, nothing to debate. I just want to congratulate Rose Henderson for being on council, and thank you to the clerk's office as well for the way that was handled, and also with that early voting option that was done so sanitarily. That was pretty amazing. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Further debate by any other council members? I guess I would just like to say thank you to all the council members that ran, and thank you for a great election. It was very uneventful, very quiet. And I think maybe a little too quiet with only 11% showing up at the polls, but we are in unprecedented times. So we did what we can. So thank you, everybody. We'll move on to item 8.3, which is the oath administered to new council members. Just give me a second. And Ms. Rickler, would you like to have the honors?
Yeah, everybody's microphone is off, right?
Okay. My microphone is off.
All right, so we'll start with Perry Barr. If you could repeat after me. I, Perry Barr, do solemnly swear or affirm.
I, Perry Barr, do solemnly swear or affirm
that I will honestly, faithfully, and I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially discharge my duties.
I will honestly, faithfully, and
impartially
discharge my duties.
Discharge my duties and obligations.
And obligations
as a member of the Bethel City Council.
As a member of the Bethel City Council,
to the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you, Ms. Laurie.
Okay, Council Member DeWitt.
I am here. My video is too slow right now. I think it's overwhelmed. So I'm going to stay on, not on video.
Yep, that sounds great. Thank you. If you could just repeat after me. I, Michelle DeWitt.
I, Michelle DeWitt.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially.
You're good. That I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially
discharge my duties and obligations.
Discharge my duties and obligations
as a member of the Bethel City Council to the best of my ability.
As a member of the Bethel City Council to the best of my ability.
Great. Congratulations. Thank you, Councilmember DeWitt. And up next is Rose Henderson. You still with us, Rose? All right. So if you could repeat after me, I, Rose Henderson.
I, Rose Henderson.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Solemnly swear or affirm.
I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially.
I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially.
Discharge my duties and obligations.
Discharge my duties and obligations.
As a member of the Bethel City Council to the best of my ability.
As a member of the Bethel City Council to the best of my ability.
Great. Thank you. And congratulations to the newly elected council members.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you. Well, yeah, take an ice cream here afterwards, right?
I wish. After this audio.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. Thank you for that, Ms. Strickler. Well done. We'll move on to 8.4, which is the appreciation for Council Member Diamond. Hugh, I really appreciate the time and effort that you've given to this council, especially some of the times that we were a junior council. At the time, and you had a lot of time and experience below your belt, so to speak. You provided a lot of, a lot of calmness to the council and very thoughtful input. So your presence was greatly appreciated by myself, and I really do thank you for the guidance that you provided and some of the experience that you brought to this city and this council. So thank you for me.
And thank you. It was my honor to. It really was. I care very much about the community, and it was. I'm pleased that I was a bit helpful during this time.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond. Do I have any other council member that would like to speak on this topic?
Please. This is Rose.
Yes, Ms. Henderson.
Hugh, I just wanted to thank you so much for all your kind words and your encouragement. It really got me very, very far in this process. And I thank you for the job that you did in helping guide everybody with all of your knowledge and expertise. So thank you, Hugh, very much.
Great. And thank you, and congratulations, Rose. Sugar.
Thank you.
Very much.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else?
This is Councillor Leary. I'll just briefly say, thanks you for stepping in, at a kind of a crisis time and, seems like you didn't have any second thoughts about it. So we appreciated, or at least I can say for myself, I appreciated your time you spent with us on council. So thank you again.
Good. Of course.
Hi, this is Cece. I kind of just ditto to the comments already made, but thank you very much, Hugh. You definitely brought a lot of experience, and I hadn't thought about it, but Perry said you're very calming, and that was definitely true. And so definitely a great person to serve with during times like these that are pretty stressful at times. So thank you so much, Hugh, and thank you all for that you do for the community.
Very good. Well, okay, thank you much, Mr. Mayor and City Council. I think the city is in good hands. I really do believe that. And I've said that before at the last meeting. I'll say it again now. You all are all very thoughtful and very, very hardworking. And the reality is most of the public doesn't understand how hard you all are working, but I do. And so, I may disagree or I may agree with the position the council takes, but I respect your effort and the fact that you looked at it so closely. So thank you very much. And I hope you guys have a great rest of the meeting.
Yeah, I was going to. Okay. Hey, Hugh, I don't know if you can see this on video, but I'm going to hand it to Laurie. It's a really nice gold pan And it says, thank you to Hugh. Thank you for your dedication and support. I think that's what it says. The City of Bethel would like to thank you for your dedication and leadership and what you provided to the city and to the council. And it's Council Member Hugh Dynett, April 2020 to October 2020. So this is either going to be a nice addition to your wall or it's going to be a darn good candy dish.
Very good. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And that'll be available for us here at the city for you to pick up or maybe. Yeah. So thank you again, Mr. Diamond. We're moving on to item 8.5, which is recognizing William F. Powell III for his service to and retirement from the City of Bethel Fire Department. And that is sponsored by myself. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Lori.
Yep.
Unless you wanted to read it.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay. Let me take a deep breath. This is the City of Bethel Proclamation.
Let's make sure that he's on. I think he's on.
Hey, Bill Powell, are you on?
Yeah, I am, Perry. Your Honor, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thank you for joining us. And this is, of course, a City of Bethel Proclamation honoring you. So thank you for showing up.
Thank you.
So this proclamation is recognizing William F. Powell III for his service to and retirement from the City of Bethel Fire Department. Whereas on July 31st, 2020, William retired from the City of Bethel Fire Department after 27 years and 5 months of dedicated and selfless service to the citizens and community of Bethel, Alaska. And whereas on March 3rd, 1993, William began his career as a firefighter EMT for the City of Bethel Fire Department after completing training at the Bates Technical College Fire Program in Tacoma, Washington, and working as a resident firefighter at Federal Way Fire Department in Federal Way, Washington. And whereas William has responded to thousands of fire and emergency medical incidents, where he has saved the lives of many in environments often considered to be hostile and immediately dangerous to life and health while ensuring his personal safety and safety of his crews. And whereas during his time as a firefighter EMT, William obtained the City of Bethel Fire Department's initial accreditation of its Firefighter One training program, thus enhancing the department's fire protection capabilities and effectiveness through certifications recognized by the State of Alaska and International Fire Service Accreditation Congress, IFASAC, and whereas in 2001, William was promoted to the position of fire captain, where he gained valuable knowledge and experience as a manager along with countless other contributions to the City of Bethel Fire Department and community. And whereas on November 25, 2014, William was promoted to the position of fire chief, where he implemented several programs which improved and streamlined the operational capabilities and increased safety of the members of the City of Bethel Fire Department and community. And whereas on September 11, 2018, William was instrumental in drafting and implementing ordinance number 18-21, property numbering and street signs, which amended chapter 17.50 of the Bethel Municipal Code to allow more uniform and visible address numbers on homes and businesses around the community, thus allowing for decreased response times during reported emergencies, therefore increasing safety community-wide. And whereas the career and volunteer members of the City of Bethel Fire Department and City of Bethel will surely miss William and appreciate all that he has done for the betterment of our community and individually during his time spent working for the City of Bethel. And now, therefore, the Bethel City Council does hereby proclaim its sincere appreciation and recognition and retirement of William F. Howell III, Fire Chief of the City of Bethel Fire Department, and wishes him the best of luck on his future endeavors. Signed the 13th day of October, 2020, by myself and Ms. Strickler. So, Ms. Strickler, if you want to show that to everybody. One of the things that I'll say, Bill, is not only as a fire chief, but as a acting city manager, we really do appreciate your commitment to this community. It greatly shows with the great service that you provide. So you're going to be missed, my friend.
Thank you, Mayor Barr. I miss you guys too. It was just a real joy working for the city. I always got more out of it than I felt I really deserved. It was just a great time, and I just thank you. Thank the City of Bethel for that time, and I'll find other ways to serve in the future.
Any other council members like to say anything? I will say this, public service for 27 and a half years is a long time. And not only does it go with the great public service, but it also comes with a lot of headache.
It's an honor, and it certainly has its ups and downs, I guess you'd say. But no, thanks again, council members. Thanks for all that you do in serving our community, and we appreciate it. Thanks, Pete, for coming back, and I just say goodbye to CC. Thank you so much, CC. It was great working with you, and Hugh, and welcome aboard, Sugar. Have a great one, guys. We'll see you around town.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
God bless.
So we're moving on the agenda. We have moved 10.7 to the last item on the agenda date. So we're moving on to agenda item IM 2016 COVID-19 Safe Guidelines and Best Practices for Halloween Celebrations and Activities. And this was sponsored by and brought forth by Councilwoman DeWitt. Ms. DeWitt? Or...
Yes, Mayor Barr, thank you. So for folks who are scrambling to follow this in the packet, this is on page 125. And this is an information memorandum to discuss safe guidelines and best practices for Halloween celebrations and activities. And I wanna thank our city clerk for spending a lot of time helping to put this together, and also thank our guests who are here to talk about this. Essentially, this is intended to help council have a discussion with health professionals about the safety of Halloween so that other community members keep thinking or talking about trick-or-treating, or organizations like we heard under People to Be Heard who might be considering hosting events can consider some of the risks with those activities. And so in this information memorandum, there are a number of activities that are outlined, activities that are considered higher risk according to the CDC, which would include participating in traditional trick-or-treating, where treats are handed to children who go door to door, or doing trunk or treat, where treats are handed out from trunks of cars and parking lots, et cetera. And then there are some moderate risk activities that are proposed, and then some low risk activities that are proposed. And again, this is advisement from the CDC. That's where this information came from, the Centers for Disease Control. And in the spirit of this, if now is an appropriate time, Mayor Barr, I would like to make a motion to suspend the rules to hear from YKHC representatives.
Thank you, Ms. Witt. Thank you, Ms. Witt. I'm sorry, do I have a second?
Leary.
Leary, thank you, Ms. Leary. All those in favor of suspending the rules, we hear from YK officials. Indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, say aye. Motion carries unanimously. Yes, Ms. DeWitt.
Perfect. So at this point, I see on the call that we have Dr. Hodges, Dr. Bates, and Vice President of Communication, Tiffany Zolkowski, on the line. And I would invite you all to perhaps give an overview about what you would advise the community for Halloween, and then maybe we could do if you're comfortable with it, Mayor Barr, maybe do a round robin around the room and invite council members to ask questions.
Yes, Ms. DeWitt.
Hey, HC, thank you for attending this evening.
Great. Good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Ellen Hodges. Thank you so much for inviting us to speak. I'm so grateful that you have asked us, and I'm grateful for the city's continued support and thoughtfulness in the setting of this pandemic. I think I'd like to start by just reminding everyone that we have about 63 active cases of COVID-19 in our region, and 32 of those cases are currently active in Bethel, which is the highest amount we have had since the start of the pandemic. Most importantly, we have over 650 close contacts that our hardworking Office of Environmental Health and Engineering are working on tracing. These are people who have been exposed to a person who has had COVID. And there's over 200 of these individuals in Bethel alone. And those are the people that we know of. There's likely many more people because of the nature of some of the more recent exposures. We just recently issued a relatively urgent public health advisory to advise people to avoid gatherings, hosting and attending gatherings. Because of the number of COVID cases that we have been seeing lately that have been coming out of gatherings. And my overall comment on this would be that it's time right now for all of us to hunker down. We really need to flatten the curve. If you look at the epidemiological curve for our region, it is very alarming. Our rates are increasing quite dramatically over the past few weeks. As such, I would encourage the council to go to the CDC website and promote the things that are safe alternatives to trick-or-treating in person or haunted houses. And many of these things should be done within members of a household. For example, carving or decorating pumpkins with members of your own household, decorating your own home, doing an outdoor Halloween scavenger hunt where children of the same household go around the neighborhood, for example, and look at people's decorations and collect admiring Halloween decorations and collecting different items for a scavenger hunt within your own household. Having virtual Halloween costume contests with members over the Zoom or FaceTime with your family. Perhaps having a movie night with people that you live with. But generally speaking, just avoiding getting together in large groups. I would recommend against door-to-door trick-or-treating. If it does occur, we would recommend that people have candy in individual bags placed more than 20 feet away from where the people in the house live. Another option might be to drive around in a car and look at people's decorations or making Halloween treats at home. These are all things that we would strongly recommend, but just due to the extreme rise in cases that we've seen both here and across the state, I believe we just hit over 10,000 cases for the state. So we just strongly believe that people should avoid getting together for any reason, and door-to-door trick-or-treating would especially be risky in this setting. And thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's the end of my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Hodges. Any from YK would like to speak?
Yes, hi. My name is Dr. Bates. Yeah, thank you. My name is Dr. Bates. I'm head of the infection. Director of our infection control program. And I'm just wanting to affirm, you know, what Dr. Hodges mentioned, and then just continue to affirm the risk of this virus. As Dr. Hodges mentioned, we've had every day we have increasing case counts, and it's affecting multiple areas in the Delta. And, you know, this disease does not just affect the elderly. It affects everyone in the community. You know, currently one in six cases of COVID-19 19 in Alaska occurs in children, occurs in individuals under 19. And I think that's important because we're also starting to learn about the impacts of COVID-19 in children, notably things like heart disease, and kids can be symptomatic for a fairly long time, including adults. Adults can also be symptomatic beyond the infectious period. So I just wanted to, it's very difficult to do things like traditional trick-or-treating safely. It's impossible to do those things safely. And it's hard to be the person telling a community not to trick-or-treat. And I just want to acknowledge that there is grief associated with this loss, but I think it's also important to know that we have to do what we can to protect our community. And I think there are alternatives, as Dr. Hodges described. And I would just strongly encourage the city council to consider supporting these alternatives and avoiding supporting things that could contribute to the transmission of COVID-19, such as gatherings, et cetera. So we're happy to take questions and any other concerns that the city has. Thank you again for your ongoing support and concern about this virus in our community. It makes a big difference for the work that we do.
This is Tiffany Volkowski, and I also want to jump in here. I want to make it clear that I'm not a physician. However, I can speak to the capacity issues that we might experience in the midst of a surge, which we're seeing cases increasing dramatically on a day-to-day basis here in the YK Delta. The state of Alaska is experiencing a COVID-19 positivity rate of roughly 5%, which means 1 in 20 individuals who are tested for COVID-19 are coming back positive. And that doesn't consider all of the close contacts that they have. And so, we've talked extensively with the public as much as we can about the capacity that we have at YKHC. We're currently in the process of more than doubling how many contact tracers we have on staff because the demand is there with the number of cases that we've been seeing. I also just want to identify that in addition to, more than doubling the capacity of our contact tracers, we're also working on making sure that we're meeting existing testing needs. And just as a reminder, we're starting to see ICU units in other parts of Alaska fill up with whether it's COVID cases or it's, non-COVID cases. There was a moment a week or two ago where all of the ICU beds in Anchorage were full and were on divert, which is not a good position for us to be in terms of local clinical care if a patient is urgent and needs to be transported. That is why YKHC issued an urgent health advisory. And with that, Mr. Mayor, I'll yield the floor and hope that folks will ask some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Zolkowski. I would entertain a motion to go into committee of the whole so that we can have more of a freer conversation.
I so move.
Thank you, Ms. Franco. Do I have a second?
This is DeWitt. I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. DeWitt. All those in favor of doing such indicate by saying aye.
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 The floor is open to any of the council members to ask any questions to YKHC. I guess I'll start. One of the things I am always grateful of is the cooperative relationship that we have with YK and how well we communicate with one another. I know I read a lot of the briefs that are brought forth by our city administration, and I really believe in that open communication. So I really greatly appreciate the hard work that you guys are doing. And if there is anything that the city can do, I'm sure that you can reach out to us and ask for any kind of assistance. So one of the questions that I have, and I was talking to one of the council members about it, is the makeup of the virus, the DNA structure of the virus. I was reading a little bit about how it has morphed from where it originated from to where it might be now. Have we had any indications as to whether the virus has changed And is it getting worse or is it getting better, or do we even know?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is Dr. Hodges. I think I can answer this one. The viruses such as the coronavirus that causes the COVID-19 disease often mutate. These are minor mutations. They don't often contribute to the increasing contagiousness of the virus or the lethality of the virus. They're mostly just markers that allow scientists to trace viruses. For example, we know that the virus that infected many of the people in Seattle originally came from China, whereas many of the other viruses that infected people that came from New York originally came from Europe. So it's just a way to sort of track the virus. There are, again, minor changes over the course of any virus, and they tend generally towards making people less sick. That's usually how coronaviruses sort of mutate over time. So that would be probably the only thing that would be that you would be of concern for the virus. It allows for a sort of like a chemical trail of the virus. And then generally speaking, over the course of a long period of time, they tend towards less, causing less trouble, so to speak.
Thank you, Doc Hodges. Anybody else for the YK?
Mayor Barr.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Haley. I have a question on behalf of the public, just as an explanation, maybe for people who I've heard concerns or questions about, the argument of, well, I don't understand why we wouldn't be able to trick or treat when it's just like a really quick interaction with somebody. It's not the 6 feet or less for 15 minutes or more interaction. And so just for the public's sake, I was wondering if somebody could speak on that and how trick-or-treating could still be a way to transmit COVID-19. Thanks.
Hello, this is Dr. Hodges. I could take a stab at this one too. So we know that this 6 feet rule for more than 15 minutes is sort of a CDC guidance. It's not necessarily a completely hard and fast rule. And we have seen in this outbreak in our region, many people becoming infected with very brief interactions, especially with highly symptomatic people who have high viral loads. So we have found that if people are very symptomatic and they interact with people who are coughing and sneezing and having spreading a lot of those respiratory droplets that we worry about, the interaction can be very, very short for people to get infected. The only studies that I am aware of that have been done on this have been done on healthcare providers and in the course of giving healthcare treatments to people who are very sick from the virus. Only a small exposure or very limited exposure had often sickened our healthcare professionals. So that's kind of where we know that maybe a very small exposure can probably make you infected, even if it's not that full 15 minutes, which is really just sort of a guidance that we use to help us as we are investigating these cases, not like a strict rule.
Yes, and this is Dr. Bates. The other thing that I would add.
About that.
That's okay. The other thing that I would add is that in the setting of sporadic community spread, as we have in Bethel that we've identified, we have over 30 cases that today, we're not at the end of the month yet. So this is just we can't identify who has the virus, and I think it behooves us as a community to do whatever we can to reduce the spread of this disease. And I think though the interactions may be brief, as Dr. Hodges identified, it doesn't take very much at all, as we've seen, to transmit this virus. And it's very contagious. It's the one thing that I've learned as we do our contact investigations. So again, I think it's whatever we can do to reduce transmission of this virus in our community and in our vulnerable healthcare system is definitely worth, I think, participating wholeheartedly in.
Yeah, and this is Tiffany. I would just add to what Dr. Bates said is that while YKHC and our physicians and our contact tracers are working overtime to try to mitigate the spread of this virus, it really takes day-to-day action from everyone in our community to see those numbers stabilize and decrease. As people might have been seeing, we made announcements of 19 cases today. Over the weekend, we made an announcement of 20 cases. So it's really important, because this virus is so contagious, that everybody do their part to stop the spread of COVID-19 in the YK Delta.
Great, thank you.
I've got a follow-up question. One of the things that I keep hearing is that we have a very low percentage, or I should say about a half and half percentage of people that is being tested over at the airport. We've made that mandate, the city ordinance that makes, that pretty much says you will be tested. Do you have any other suggestions as how we can maybe provide a little more pressure on the number of passengers that are coming in from outside?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's actually an excellent question. I think I heard a comment from somebody that there had been a raffle or something like that, and they held a drawing and that person had won some money. I think perhaps having that kind of incentive, like I think gift cards were thought of, that kind of thing. We have higher percentages of people who participate in testing when there's that kind of incentive. So I would recommend the council think about that instead of a stick, try carrot.
Yeah, I would agree with that approach. I think, so oftentimes people get tested before they come, but we're still probably not hitting 100%. And I think we do see testing on the weekends when the city of Bethel was offering gift cards. We got dramatically increased numbers and percentage of participation. So I think that's something I would definitely advocate for the city to consider.
What other steps do you think we should take or maybe we should recommend to the public? You talked about 20 feet away during Halloween when you're putting out candy and keeping it out for a while. Do you recommend a lot of disinfecting of the substances that are being handed out?
I'll defer to Dr. Bates, our infection preventionist, on that one.
Yeah, I think there's no safe way to disinfect candy or disinfect, create social distancing in this setting. I think, like we said, children are going to be children on Halloween. And I think I can't think of a strategy to safely decontaminate candy without, affecting the integrity of wrappers, et cetera, and so this is something I would, I would avoid doing and just think about alternative strategies for Halloween that do not include leaving candy out. And again, those alternatives that Dr. Hodges mentioned, because I think, again, there's just no safe way I can think of decontaminating a candy wrapper. So that's my infection control brain working.
I know one of the things I have friends that are positive with virus, and the descriptions that they're giving me scares the crap out of me. They say it is something unlike anything that they have ever experienced. So when you talk about how potent this germ is, could you maybe talk a little bit more on that?
Yeah, I think I can just take, I support Dr. Hodges will weigh in too, I'm sure, but we see on average and nationally, at least one person can infect three people is what they are seeing across the nation. But I think in Bethel, we've had one person infect up to 40 individuals. So I think this virus is incredibly contagious, as Dr. Hodges mentioned. And so I think this is something that we need increased vigilance for, to protect against. And those things include, those mitigation strategies include wearing masks, frequent hand hygiene, but most importantly, social distancing and those strategies that we've strongly been recommending. I think the call that we put out yesterday about avoiding gatherings. This is a reflection of the increased cases that we're seeing. And we're just sort of desperate to flatten that curve to help protect our vulnerable healthcare system. So I think you're right, Mayor Barr. It is very contagious. And I think it is definitely worth understanding and reflecting on that when we decide about the behaviors that we do and the things that we do and just how much needing to go trick-or-treating weighs on the burden of our community that could be, you know, this virus becoming widespread. Dr. Hodges, anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, Dr. Bates, that was very well said. I think that it's useful to remember that a couple of things. One, open meaning that the state is may relifted a lot of the mandates doesn't mean this pandemic is over. And I think, especially in Alaska, we're reaching an acceleration phase right now of this virus. And I find that just very, very worrisome. It literally keeps me up nights when I think about how our epidemic curve in our state is going and our lack of resources statewide, really, for staffing our ICU beds. And that's a very lagging indicator. We would really like to intervene before we even need those ICU beds. And this pandemic isn't going to last forever. We're not saying people can't do this activity for the rest of their lives. We're just saying maybe this winter, this is not a good idea. And maybe just this winter, we need to make the sacrifices that we all have to make to keep our communities safe, our elders safe, and all of the people who live in our communities safe.
And the only last thing, sorry, the last thing I just want to add is, you know, having seen people who are critically ill of this virus, you know, I think that is, it's a demonstration to me of how important prevention is. You know, this virus, as you've described your friend's experience, I would not wish this on my worst enemy or even, you know, it's just so profoundly devastating, you know? And so I think anything we can do to reduce that risk, to reduce the risk of our family members getting it, our community members, I think is definitely worth considering. Because again, you don't want to see this happen to anyone you love or anyone even that you don't love. You don't want to see it to happen to anyone. And I certainly don't want to see it in our emergency room, although I know we will. But anything we can do to reduce that risk, I just cannot advocate for more strongly.
I have a question.
Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Henderson?
Yes, thank you. Sorry. I saw in the news tonight that they were saying the second wave of the virus is working its way through the states. Would you say here in Bethel, are we on our first wave or are we on a second wave? I'm just curious as to where we're at compared to the lower 48.
That's a really great question. And I was on a call not that long ago with the chief medical officer who said they called their first wave in Alaska a wave let because it was so small. And that we're really probably just in our primary outbreak. And I would say the same is the same for our region. We did not really experience that many cases. If you go back and look at our epidemiological curve, we experienced very few cases until the large and relatively dramatic jump in cases in the last month. So I would say that we're still in our first sort of wave of cases in the beginning of the outbreak for our region.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think the important marker for me looking at the epidemiological map is in the first wave is what we've like what we saw in New York and throughout the lower 48 sort of in the last month is when we hit 5% positivity for testing, that is the marker of exponential spread. That's when sort of the horse has left the proverbial barn, which we are approaching. If you look at ADN, if you look at the DHSS website, that tracks the positivity of our tests, our testing, we are at like 4.5% today, and we just continue to climb. So I think that's also an indicator of sort of where we are in the trajectory. But I certainly agree with Dr. Hodges that we are likely in our primary outbreak.
Thank
or first wave, if you will.
Ms. Cleary, you had a question?
Yeah, thank you. I'm hoping that you guys were able to hear Teresa Kleiner describe what the library is planning to do for Halloween. And I was just hoping we could get your opinion on what you think about that. And I believe Teresa described it as, you know, one household at a time going through a haunted house at the library. As much as I do know haunted houses are generally advised against, but in this setting, it would be one household at a time. And I believe she said they have to sign up ahead of time for like the time slot to go in. So there won't be a big gathering, but what do you guys think about what they're proposing? Thank you.
Hi, this is Dr. Hodges. I'll weigh in first and then pass off to Dr. Bates. I generally would be opposed to something like that. I think, again, this is just not the year for that kind of activity. We're really in an exponential growth phase right now, and we have to do everything we can to flatten the curve. And as much as you try, I don't know that you could appropriately disinfect the area well enough. I don't know that you could be careful enough is what I'm trying to say. So I guess my recommendation would be sort of against that. And then there was another recommendation, I think, about sort of a trick-or-treating idea of preparing the bags of candy and setting them out. And again, I think just the disinfection of candy would be difficult to achieve. They did say they would leave them out for a week. And I think that's probably at least a little bit of a good mitigation factor. But again, having people congregate to pick up the bags of candy is just kind of a bad idea. I think right now, especially here in Bethel, we just really need to focus on hunkering down and avoiding people that are not in our own households for now, just because of this huge increase of cases we've seen in the past few days.
Yes, hi, this is Dr. Bates. I would agree with that. I think the discussion of having a haunted house, you know, part of the CDC about 3 weeks ago issued some guidance and concern that this virus could be partially aerosol. And so in that way, just to affirming the fact that there can be no decontamination of an aerosol, an aerosolized virus, especially in a library or even in a it has to be a negative pressure room, a very specialized room that is required, you know, in a hospital. And so I think that would be my recommendation, because that's a concern for this virus, even if people are wearing masks. The other concern, as Dr. Hodges mentioned, like I said, there's no way to completely clean every surface. And again, these are kids, you know, they're going to touch everything. And so we've seen, you know, this virus is transmitted very easily. In these short interactions. And also there's concern that it's transmitted through touching mutual surfaces. So again, I think it's, you know, even though I appreciate the library's efforts to use mitigation strategies to create an alternative, I just think in this time, in this setting where we're having exponential growth, where we're having sporadic community transmission in Bethel, we have increasing number of cases, I just would, you know, I think deferring until next year, think about how much better it can be next year, what we can do bigger and better now that we'll have a whole year to prepare. I think that would be my recommendation, because it's just too high risk in this setting. You know, this is a once in a lifetime pandemic, and we just need to, I think, consider it in that, with that historical context. So thank you.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes, Ms. Larry, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Thank you both for your answers on that one. So I was just wondering if, you know, if YK is planning, and this might be a question for Tiffany too, but if YK is planning to do any messaging about, I know about the message that came out, I don't know, yesterday or today about, you know, advising against gatherings, but if there's any plans to do messaging specifically for trick-or-treating, just knowing that the City of Bethel's Facebook page has significantly, you know, less followers than YK's, just, you know, hoping that, you know, if this passes tonight, that we'll maybe get some support from YK with getting the message out that, you know,
traditional trick-or-treating isn't advised this year, and kind of, you know, all of this really great guidance. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Tiffany. I can take that one. So we certainly would love to help get the word out about recommendations and the suggestions that we've been talking about here today. You know, we were really focused this week on issuing that public health advisory. We consider it to be pretty urgent. We've seen such a rise in cases and exposures that I also want to make a note that we're expanding public testing at our drive-through testing tent here in Bethel for 2 additional days. So anybody can show up without an appointment on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of this week from noon to 4 p.m. So we encourage anybody who has participated in gatherings in the last 7 days, anybody who maybe has traveled, and anybody who is just concerned about potential exposure, we encourage the public to come out Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of this week from noon to 4 at the drive-through testing tent. No appointment is necessary. And if everyone can just help us by heeding the recommendations, like I mentioned earlier, we can certainly put out the message, we can certainly make recommendations, but it really takes everybody in our community taking those actions every day and being personally responsible to help us stop the transmission of this virus.
Mayor Barr, I have a suggestion. This is Rose.
Yes, Ms. Henderson.
A request, actually. Tiffany, if you guys, I see a lot of posts on Facebook, and I think it would be very beneficial if maybe you put into your post that you're encouraging people to share that post and make it shareable. And I think the word would get out a lot faster, maybe. I'm just thinking of trying to think of ways to get this information out. One post that nobody shares or is unable to share, maybe, I don't know for sure. I think it doesn't get very far being able to share it. Thank you.
Sure, yeah, thank you for that recommendation. Anything that's posted on YKHD's Facebook page is public, so it's inherently shareable. We also put targeted Facebook ads to particular markets, so we target advertising to certain communities on certain posts, and we've been pushing and promoting a lot of the things that we've been talking about here. And we also do our best to make sure that we're looping in KYUK and people using our website. So we just encourage people to stay engaged and pay attention.
Thank you so much.
Mayor Barr, this is Councilmember DeWitt. May I ask one question?
Yes, please.
You know, knowing that people are listening on KYUK or participating in our meeting via Zoom, if you guys could give one advisement on in-person Halloween trick-or-treating and just have it be a one-liner, I'm curious what Dr. Bates and Dr. Hodges would say to the public about in-person trick-or-treating.
This is Dr. Hodges. My line would be, this is not the year to do it.
Yeah, I think my line would be, it's not safe in 2020 for in-person trick-or-treating for our families or for our communities.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Councilmember Franco. I'm not sure if this is necessarily a question for Dr. Hodges or Dr. Bates, but I'm just trying to think, you know, probably the way for this to be most effective would to be provide some sort of, you know, alternative, like you said, you know, staying at home with your family, carving a pumpkin, making treats. But then the reality of that not being
an option for every family in Bethel, you know, for numerous different circumstances, whether those are financial or if their parents are stuck working or whatnot. And I wonder, it would probably still be risky, but I wonder if it's possible to like drop off Halloween care packages that the city created. I'm assuming it's still a risk based on the comments you made about the plan for the church to have candy bags be picked up. But I wonder what it's different if, you know, someone is driving around and dropping things off at their doorstep, if that's any less risky. Thank you.
No, I appreciate that. That's a great question. This is Dr. Hodges, and I know people are really grieving the loss of what this kind of celebration is. I know Halloween is probably my favorite holiday, and the idea of not having a kids coming to my house and being able to participate in the joy and the wonder that brings every year is really hard. It's very difficult, but I think I would probably make a recommendation against that as well. I think if people can celebrate Halloween really in their households, that would really be what we would recommend the most. So, you know, carving pumpkins with your family and, you know, enjoying the things in your own household and your own family, and not having that potential risk of transfer of the virus with distributing packets of candy. I just think that's probably too risky this year.
Yeah. Hi, and this is Dr. Bates. That is a great question, Councilwoman Franco, and I'm grateful to, I think it's always important to acknowledge privilege in these situations and in really every situation. But I would agree with Dr. Hodges. I think, you know, this is at this time, it still would be risky to do drop-offs just because, you know, there's still interaction on a small amount of level because we're passing things back and forth. I think alternatives like watching a scary movie at home, or, you know, getting something from Redbox and like you can, and having the kids still dress up, face painting, you know, there's certain, I think those are possible strategies to make things fun. Making a scary play with your family. I don't know. I think there are certain things that can, if we can get creative, that can be done on a budget. But I think, again, it's just trying to reduce the long-term risk. And then also I know my dentist friends would be happy if, kids ate less candy. So I'll do a plug for them too. But I think at this, you know, as I said, in 2020, I think it's still a little, still high risk to do passing back and forth, even in a drop-off situation.
Thank you. And yeah, that's what I assumed. I just wanted, just throwing some ideas out there. And I wonder, I don't know, just another idea, if we could use care funds and provide like a gift certificate or something to like AC or Swanson's, and maybe people could buy healthy like fruit or a pumpkin to carve or something. Because I just know, I think I understand how very important it is that, you know, this is not the year to be participating, but I also think people will be more willing to listen if there is an alternative, and knowing that there's a lot of people in this community that maybe just, you know, the only way it means for them to go do something is leaving their home and going out there. So I don't know, just an idea, but thank you.
Mayor Barr, this is DeWitt. Can I say something?
Yes, ma'am, please.
I do think that maybe ways the city could help support virtual Halloween activities or something of that nature, or some of the groups that talked about their planned events, if there's a way to pivot some fun into a virtual environment, is really worthy of consideration. It certainly, we all know, does not take the place of in-person, but is better than no activities at all. But I also want to really express appreciation for this conversation, which is really difficult because we're talking about something that impacts the whole community, a lot of folks here, enjoy participating in Halloween at many different levels and talking about how this really cannot be done safely this year. And I know that that's going to be disappointing news to a lot of people. But I really want to remind folks who are listening that, you know, this isn't, nobody in this conversation has caused the situation, and that really this is in the spirit of keeping people, you know, healthy and safe. And I have to express that, you know, even bringing this forward as an IM was concerning to me, because I know that folks might not like to hear some of the conclusions or the discussion that we're having, but it's really important for us to have these discussions because health is at risk and our safety is at risk and our community is at risk. So I really want to express a lot of gratitude for folks who have contributed so far and all the council members for engaging in this debate, because it is difficult to talk about impacting things that are fun and that are looked forward to all year long. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Witt. Any other council members?
Yeah, this is Haley. I just had one idea real quick. I know we're trying to wrap this up. But one thing that kind of bypasses, you know, that I know privilege has been addressed with, you know, not everyone has internet access or, you know, money to buy a pumpkin or things like that. But one thing I was thinking is even if there was some kind of, I don't know how this would actually happen, but like neighborhood competitions for yard decorating or something, where like, I don't know, old pieces of wood and like basically scavenged materials to make like a scarecrow in your yard. And I don't know, something between neighborhoods to try and bring the community together while also allowing people to either drive around or walk around all spaced out to look at it. Kind of like people do with lights at the holiday times. And so, I don't know, that's just an idea I was throwing out there that could kind of get people moving too, right? We were talking to, we got a diabetes presentation earlier and kind of combines the two. So just an idea.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Anybody else? I guess a couple things for me. Dr. Bates, Dr. Hodges, Ms. Zilkowski from YK, I really appreciate your input tonight and the comments that you made. I know that, you know, one of the things that we are as human beings is we are social beings. And sometimes we need to have that. We need to congregate. We need to come together. And at this particular moment in time and in history, we can't do that. So, you know, maybe sometimes our mental well-being is affected by that. Is there any guidance out there that maybe YK can provide or point a finger to, maybe to help people that are struggling with this virus?
Yeah, I think that this is Dr. Hodges. I think this is an often overlooked part of the pandemic that I'm very interested in as well. I think we grieve the loss of the normalcy that we want to have back. And I think reaching out to each other and making a point every day to connect with the people in your lives and going out of your way to make these connections by phone if you can't go in person, by FaceTime if you can, and just doing all the things that you can to reach out to the people around you and paying attention to your mental health, especially as we lose the light. I know that some people suffer from seasonal affective disorder and the winter can be hard anyway. And now we're saying, that we're in the middle of a pandemic and things are dangerous and interacting with people, the very thing we often crave might be something that could be potentially dangerous, especially those of us who feel such a strong need to gather around things that are happy, like weddings and baby showers and happy things and sad things like the loss of a loved one at a funeral or a wake. These are things that are very difficult for us as human beings to put aside in the setting of a pandemic. And so just really focusing on that and reaching out and making the social connections that you can is very important. I think One of the council members mentioned exercise. We strongly recommend exercise out of doors. You can leave your mask off if you're not around anybody. You can bring a mask with you, though, to put on if you pass someone. So getting some exercise outdoors every day is essential. In the winter, try to do it when it's sunny, when it's light out, try to do it over your lunch hour if you possibly can. So those kinds of things, just really trying to focus on your physical health as well as your mental health, and just keeping that human connection as much as you possibly can with your loved ones is so important. And check in with people that you think might be struggling. That's also absolutely essential. I think it's really, a lot of people are having to quarantine nowadays, either because they're close contacts to a case or they traveled, or they may have health conditions that make it dangerous for them to be out in public. And reach out to those people. And I just encourage everyone in this community to continue our COVID kindness. This is just a wonderful, supportive, and beautiful community. And if we can all just keep that up and get us over this winter, I truly think things will be better next year. So thank you for bringing that up. It's such an important and overlooked aspect of this pandemic.
Yeah, and this is Tiffany. I just wanted to... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Bates.
No, you go.
I was just going to add that... our YKHC's Jawhi Jawhak program has done some incredible work and research about, resiliency amidst the pandemic. And we've had some early discussions with how we can pull some of that information together. That work is still in the formative stages. So we don't have things ready quite yet to put out there, but we've been working with our research team to make sure that we can share additional information around protecting mental health and supporting that resiliency during the pandemic.
Yeah, and I don't have too much to add just because Dr. Hodges and Tiffany spoke so eloquently, but I think, again, just reaching out to folks that we think they're struggling. I also sort of love Councilwoman Hansen's idea about creating pieces of art in the yard. Because I think we know that using that right brain can be also very therapeutic. And so, and encourage people to think about that as an alternative for safe Halloween too. Again, as like something in your household to do together. But again, I think just reaching out and relying on each other, even remotely, this is one thing that I love about this community, that I found a lot of hope and power here through that. So, I think that's something that I would continue to encourage. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Bates, Dr. Hodges, and Ms. Sokalski again. Just a couple of comments, closing comments for myself. I guess one of the things that I will say is the greatest fear that I have during this pandemic is if I were responsible for spreading the virus. If I were the one that was asymptomatic and I was out there within the community and I was responsible for making some very people ill, that's the greatest fear that I have with this pandemic. And that's the way I look at this virus. And I hope everybody looks at the virus in some similar fashion. It's not only protecting ourselves, but it's protecting other people and protecting this community. The last thing that I want to say is Ms. DeWitt had put together a COVID-19 safe guidelines and best practices for Halloween celebrations and activities. And that is our information memorandum 20-16. It is online. It is on the City of Bethel's website. It's in the council's packet. So as a reminder for everybody that heard this conversation tonight, that is available online. I have no other comments concerning this conversation. Anybody else have any closing comments? If not, we are going to move on. Again, thank you, Dr. Bates, Dr. Hodges, and Ms. Sokalski from YKHC. And we are up to item number 9, which is the unfinished business, 9.1, public hearing of 2020-31, amending Bethel Municipal Code 2.8, city manager, and 2.12, city officers, by, and this was brought forth by acting city manager Strickler. I would entertain a main motion to adopt ordinance 20-31.